This week on The Inside Flap.
I can't, in any other part of the world, go anywhere, buy some popcorn, buy some, like, sour gummy sweets. I can't just walk down the street and do that.
No.
The only time I'm allowed to do it is if I go to the cinema.
Yeah.
And so sometimes I think, I'd love just like a bag of sweets. That would be amazing. And I don't have there's no forum for me to do that.
Better go to
Whereas
the movies.
If I go and see Top Gun Maverick, you know, I can go, I've got my sweets and I guess I'll watch this Tom Cruise movie as well. You're saying the only way I can relax is for there to be sandalwood and like men paid to pummel me, right? That's honestly, it's the only way I can relax. The only way I can get any peace.
Yeah, that's
right. Is to be pummeled by an Eastern European guy while I'm looking at a Persian rug. It's all like, it's the only thing I can do. You just think, wow. I mean, I can just walk down the street and relax. You know,
mm-hmm.
No pummeling needed.
No.
The Inside Flap is available on demand and every week on iTunes, Spotify, and around the world on theinsideflap.com. What more can we do for you?
Podcasting live from Littleton, Colorado. This is the Inside Flap Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us today. My name is Dave Medicus, and welcome to the show. Seated across the table to my right is Laura Medicus.
Howdy.
And on the other side of the snack shack, resting comfortably on the floral settee, is Andrew Dowd.
Excelsior.
Thank you for joining us on episode 185 of The Inside Flap. We appreciate you listening to us. Feel free to go ahead and leave us a 5-star review on iTunes or wherever you listen mm-hmm. to your podcasts on. We don't ask a lot. In fact, we ask nothing of you. We deliver free content. So hit us up and give us a 5-star review.
So we are nearing episode 200.
Yes.
I mean, it's so within like 4 months, really. It's going to be episode 400. So we've got basically, what, October, November, December. So January of next year, late January, probably be airing episode 200. So
awesome.
We have any special plans, Dave and Laura?
Cakes.
Cakes. You're going to bring over cakes. That's the plan. All right.
Cakes.
We do have a great episode
Candles,
for today as we're joined
cakes.
Once again by...
I'd like a live band.
A live band. That sounds good. We, you know, Letterman used to do his anniversary specials in different locations. We'll do it on an airplane. How about that?
Okay. Private.
Anyway, we got a great guest for you today. We're joined again by Richard Osman. Now, you know Richard Osman. In addition to being a quiz show host and creator of the BBC One quiz show Pointless, he's also a best-selling author. His latest is the third installment of the Thursday Murder Club mystery series. Mm-hmm. He is absolutely hilarious and great to talk to. I had a chance to talk to him. Sadly, Laura, you had some technical difficulties and were not able to.
I did. Read the book. Loved the book. I'll rave about it when you rave about it.
That's right. His latest one is called The Bullet That Missed. And we'll have that conversation for you in just a bit. And you can find out all about why he loves going to the movies. And spoiler alert, it has really nothing to do with the actual movies. So look forward to that.
Snacks.
There are snacks. We definitely got into snacks. Yes, and you did. You just you just hit on it. Well, and it's not just the snacks either, but there's more to it. Anyway, but first, it's been another busy week at school for me. So after we had the active shooter call, that turned out to be a prank and a hoax, but we still got evacuated by the SWAT team. Twice now, somebody, and that happened during sixth period of last week. Now, twice during sixth period since then, and it just happened again yesterday, someone has thought it to be hilarious to pull the fire alarm.
Twice? So,
twice now it's happened where the fire alarm has gone off, and it's been pulled during sixth period, and the kids are just so over it. They are done. Yeah.
So how many periods are there in your school?
Seven.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. In fact, today we were moving some wood around
That's
the school.
So
we
had annoying.
We have a bunch of platforms up in the balcony left over from our fall production of last year, where the fire marshal came in and he didn't like the fact that we were storing a bunch of wooden platforms in front of the doors at the top of the balcony. Even let alone the balcony is never used for seating. But anyway, we had to move all these platforms, these heavy platforms from the third floor all the way down to our stage. And I was going past a fire alarm. I saw a little sticky note next to the fire alarm, and it said, "Only poopy heads pull fire alarms. Don't be a poopy head."
So, is that the new anti...
the kids are...
vandalism campaign.
Are sick of it.
Smart. Yeah. I think that'll catch on.
I think it's catching on. We didn't have a fire alarm today, so we're one for one. But outside of that, it is marching band season once again, along with play season for me, as at my school, we're working hard on our building set for that one. But this past weekend was the first marching band competition of the season, and we got to give a big shout out to Sylvia's marching band, the Littleton Lions. They took...
it's called the Pride of Littleton.
Oh, yeah. The Pride of Littleton, as they took fourth place and received the highest score they've ever gotten in the history of Littleton Marching Band. And this is the first performance of the season. So absolutely amazing. Kudos to them. Now, I volunteered.
I just want to tell. Yeah. So we've been, you know, we've been band parents. It's our third year, but really our second year as competitive band parents, right. Andrew.
We are now competitive band parents.
And last year, we were not the worst, but we definitely weren't the best. Like, we didn't make it to finals.
Oh, I thought you meant we're not the best band parents.
No. Well, we're definitely not the best band parents, but we're also not the worst.
I'm going to say we are the best band parents.
But we wouldn't get to the finals. So you do two shows. So you do the semifinals in the morning. Basically every time last year we would get asked not to come back for the finals. So we'd be sadly packing up the truck, heading home still in daylight while the other bands that got the finals, parents would be talking to each other, unloading the truck.
You had the prelims assembling in the morning. So you go to do the preliminaries in the morning, and then you have to sit around and wait for every band to go.
Like we also had last year where we knew we were so terrible that we just packed the truck up and left.
Now, be honest here. Were you ever relieved to not have to stay late?
No, I wasn't. However, Andrew, that is what I was thinking about, because this time we did get asked back, and our show wasn't until 7:45. And Andrew, I had been going since 5:50 that morning on marching band things.
Right. Had to get up and early to be there early in
after
the morning.
The semifinal show, we had to reload the semi truck and the three pickup trucks that are support staff. So then we had to unload the semi while all the other bands are loading around us. And I thought, there is something to be said for not being that good. There really is.
You can get out of there.
You get to go home. Yeah. You're home by dusk.
I thought it was interesting that our band director, Don Emmons, he decided after the preliminary to not, did the reverse jinx. So instead of leaving all the stuff out, they packed up.
We had to.
It was a tractor trailer.
We were asked to move.
Oh, you were asked to move. Oh, I thought it was like a reverse jinx kind of deal.
Oh, we would have left it out.
I see. Yeah. Okay.
So that's what we've done in years past, is just left it out and hope.
Okay, and then sadly packed it up after getting the word.
Yes.
So to me sounds a bunch of whining band parents.
It is.
I mean, you're putting a couple of drum sets and some saxophones on the back of the truck.
I see what you're doing here, Andrew.
Yeah. Come on.
I know. It is like a Broadway production that you have to move. It's like a traveling Broadway show, Andrew.
It is.
That only performs for, want to know how long? 7 minutes.
Right.
That's it. 7 minutes. That's it.
I mean, there's 9 carts, 4x8 rolling carts with huge letters on them. There's 3 massive speaker carts that weigh, I don't know, I think the guy said they were like over 500 pounds. There is you got the pit. So you've got, you know, the bells, the glockenspiels, whatever they're called, the xylophones. You've got a piano, an electric keyboard. You've got where the drum major has to stand, two elevated platforms. You've got a series of 2 different wooden steps to get up onto the platform.
There were 4.
You don't even know.
Dave, there were 4 75-pound wooden steps.
This involves probably 25 parents just rolling all the 25.
They asked for 30.
Rolling all the, because you got to go from the truck to the field. And then the parents have to get the stuff on it. Now, I was on speaker duty. That's why I know these were over 500 pounds. There are 3 speakers. Now, I had the center speaker. Now, this is the first time.
You did?
Yeah. I was a little nervous because I had to find the power cord. So the football field, the stadium, they supply. So I was there for the evening performance. I had to work in the morning. But they supply the power. So you have to find the power. I had to plug in my speaker. And then I have like an outlet where everybody else plugs into me. And there's like, and then you have to find the jacks for the subwoofer.
You had to do all
and
of
then,
that?
Yes. And then you have to find the jack for the main speaker. So it was a lot, so I'm worried. It turned out to be very easy to do.
That's
but
stressful,
I'm still
though.
Worried. I got to be the one who's in charge
you
of the power.
You don't know this, but
and
they
I
had,
never done it.
They had speaker problems on their semifinal show.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, I said to the guy, so there was a guy running around, one of the head parents, I don't know who he is, he's one of the guys in charge, but he came over and was talking to all of us, and I grabbed him, and he said, and I said to him, hey, which direction should the speaker face? You know, I'm just joking. The guy didn't get my joke, or he didn't think I was funny. He looked at me, and he pointed at the audience, and then he twirled around on his heels and marched away from me. And then later on, I saw, after I put my card in place and plugged everything in, he came up and double-checked my work behind me. Yeah, after hearing that comment.
No sense of humor.
No.
Or maybe he's been around a lot. I know who this parent is.
Yeah.
They have like a lot of distance between their kids. So I think they have a child that might be 7 to 10 years older than the current child.
Right.
So they were band parents about 10 years ago. So it's possible he's just seen it
it's
all.
It's possible. So the way it works is, you know, there are I don't know, dozens of bands that are performing in the evening. And when you get your call time, there's still like four bands ahead of you. So you have time to make your way down there. And by the time you get there, there's like two bands and all the equipment lined up. You know, you got 100 kids plus 25 parents plus all the equipment. And you're lined up along the track. And then when it's your time to go, the whistle goes off and you have so much time to get everything set up.
Is there
and
a whistle?
You mess up? No, there's a guy who says go.
Because I'd like a whistle.
It should be a whistle.
I'd love a whistle. I'd like a countdown.
So when we got inside the stadium.
You don't know how much time
you've
got.
That's true.
You feel like you've been out there in the field dilly-dallying with stuff.
It takes a long time because when you get there, there's still two bands ahead of you to go.
I bet you there's an app that you could all download this app that would let you all synchronize.
Synchronize it and then we'd see it.
Yep.
Yeah, that's true.
That's actually a great
idea.
And
well, the people in charge all have walkie-talkies. Like all the head band parents have the walkie-talkies, and they're all in contact. Anyway, so there are two bands to go. One band is playing on the field, and I'm standing there with our friend Mark, another parent, and we're chit-chatting, and he notices that the band ahead of us, they all have their backs turned to the band performing on the field. And we're like, what the hell is going on there? And we're speculating. Now it's just sheer speculation. And we speculate that the band director, and now we've never seen anything like this before, that the band director.
Usually you stand there and you kind of
watch.
You watch.
And you cheer the other bands on. You applaud for them as they come off because they walk right past you as they're leaving the stadium.
The kids all applaud for each other.
Yeah. And they say, good job.
Usually.
Yeah. Well, this band had every single one of them had their backs turned. And the band director is marching up and down. And what we think is that he's telling them to focus on their show and to not get distracted. But the optics are terrible.
It's coming off as rude.
It looks as if like you were saying, we're too good for you. You're not even worthy of us watching you. We're going to put our backs. We're going to turn our backs to you. And how this guy doesn't see that. And we thought it was Air Academy. So we're sitting there, and
we thought it was Air Academy, which is it's a public high school, and as you can imagine, it's right near the Air Force Academy in downtown Littleton.
It's the breeding ground for future cadets, Air Force.
They're the children of the Air Force. Yeah.
So we are trashing
some of them
Air Force Academy. We're talking smack about. Service people, we are just going off on Army brats.
I had a great experience with the Air Force guy.
Hold on. So we're because we thought that this was who was turning their backs, and then when the band was announced and they started walking on, and we found out it was not Air Force Air Academy, when it was in fact Rio Rancho High School in New Mexico. So they come all the way up from New Mexico, and the guy won't even let them watch some bands. I was reminded of the scene. Andrew, have you seen Hoop Dreams?
I have not.
All right, Laura, you've seen Hoop Dreams.
Long time
right?
ago, though.
Now, if you remember, their show a scene where there are two teams traveling to a game, and they all get in the bus. And after they get in the bus, on the one bus, you have the uptight white coach who starts screaming at his kids to sit there, be quiet, don't talk, and think about the game. And the next shot shows all these kids kind of sitting there sadly, looking out the window, and they're all depressed. And then they smash cut to this other team, and there's raucous laughter. They're, you know, high-fiving, they're talking, they're joking around, and, you know, and they're loose. And you can see it. One team's uptight. Yeah. But anyway, that's what I was reminded of. Marching band should be fun. These are high schoolers.
You know what I found
this
out
be fun.
Further what? Is that a lot of bands in Douglas County do that. So it is something that even like by county, that can
That's
be a thing.
Thing.
It
this is a thing?
Yes. Hey, Sylvia's trombone teacher told us that last night.
Really?
Yes.
Well, it's absolutely ridiculous.
Good. So I have to ask, how is Rock Canyon High School?
Rock Canyon's usually good. I don't remember, though.
I don't know. Why is that? Is that where
that's where our kids are going to go?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I feel all like they're pretty good. I don't know. The best this year was Fossil Ridge. It seems to change year by year, is what I'm noticing.
Yep. Yeah. And you know who's getting better? That's the Pride of Littleton.
Pride of Littleton was killing it.
Oh, yeah. And then what we did also was Mark and I, because once we got all set up and we have all these giant letters scattered all around the field, so we tried to see, you know, I spotted LSD. You could spell out LSD.
Oh, what you can spell?
And Mark spotted out a skank. You could spell out skank if you used a C instead of a K.
Nice.
So that's what we were up to.
Nice, as one does.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really good.
Andrew,
I like that.
How has your week been?
As usual, it has been a busy week, but breaking news.
Oh, well, hold on. Breaking news whenever it feels like breaking.
So I don't know. I got home, right? And, you know, and I work and I got my head and whatever. So Katie was at the Safeway.
Oh, I heard about this.
At 11:30 today.
You are kidding. She was at the Safeway today. And Dave, I bet Dave Medicus does not know.
I have no idea.
Yeah. Okay. An hour later, they had the bomb squad there. And they found an actual pipe bomb at the Safeway.
Whoa, no way.
Yep, and they had to disarm it, and they said it was a functioning pipe bomb. And, you know, they had the bomb squad in there, the guy in the bomb suit. I mean, there's images and stuff. And for whatever reason, it really wasn't on the news tonight. Like, I don't know why they didn't cover it, but, you
Too
know.
Too many other horrific things.
Yeah, it's not every day.
Problem. No.
It's not every day.
Here's the question I have for you, Andrew. I didn't know she was there during it, but... What kind of damage can a pipe bomb do? I don't know anything about pipe bombs.
So,
a lot.
And so here's the thing about a pipe bomb. It isn't necessarily that it does a ton of explosive damage.
Mm-hmm.
It's the shrapnel.
It's the shrapnel.
Yeah, it shoots
hurt.
Out like nails.
Well, and that's it too. Is they can pack it with stuff. So that's the thing is, if
that's
a terrifying. If a pipe
that's
bomb,
that's what was along the Boston Marathon route when that bomb went off.
You are kidding me.
No,
It's incredibly destructive to humans.
And that's just it. Yeah,
we'll kill.
Wow, yeah. Where was it? Do you know where was it? Was it in front
it
of?
It was behind the store, right? It was back in the parking lot behind the store,
like to get employees or something. Why would you?
I mean,
put it there?
I don't know. They haven't said. They said it was
be behind the store.
It was more sophisticated. They said it was more sophisticated than your normal pipe bomb.
What
so
does
it was,
a pipe bomb look like? Do we know? Is it in a? Is it in one of pressure cooker?
No. It's typically a pipe. So basically, they take a metal pipe, they stuff it full of explosives.
Wow.
They screw the caps on both ends. And the thing, one of the things about bombs,
I'm gonna look this up,
is that bombs basically. So let's say you take a pile of explosives, but you don't compress them. What ends up happening is like it'll explode and it'll be a big flash, but there isn't any explosion, right? You actually have to put the explosives inside of something that is going to cause it that when you ignite it, it's going to cause the pressure to build, and it's going to cause the pressure to basically release. And so the bomb is in a pipe, and like Dave said, they typically pack it with nails, screws, something.
I see it.
Yep.
Just sharp stuff.
It's just a pipe.
Sharp pieces of metal.
I will say, if you Google pipe bomb, unfortunately, Littleton's the first thing right now.
Oh, yeah.
Is it really?
Yeah.
It's the top story.
And this is the this is the Safeway on Broadway over
it's
by
the
your
one
house?
That Andrew goes
Broadway
to.
And, Broadway
it's
and Mineral.
Nice, it's a very nice Safeway.
It's
actually.
A really nice Safeway.
And so then, so that happened today, right? And you know, and it's just like, I don't know, it's, you know, and you're just
something
like.
Something in the water,
what
man.
What the hell?
Yeah.
And, you know, and I don't know what anybody has against the Safeway there. It's just a local community shopping center. you know? And then the other thing is Dashiell, my 13-year-old, mm-hmm. he went to the orthodontist today, mm-hmm. and it turns out he needs braces. And that poor little kid was crying for like 3 hours straight.
You're kidding.
Oh, no, he wouldn't look the doctor in the
you
eye.
You are kidding.
He was angry at mom. He's angry at the world.
Really?
Right? And... you know,
you know, his kissing prowess is gonna yeah, is gonna go gonna down.
Suffer. Yeah, well, you know,
it's gonna
if
suffer.
He, if he gets it done now, by the time he's 15, they might be gone. But you know, they're like, oh yeah, you'll just need to have those braces on for 18 months. Then 18 months comes up, and they're like, you know, I think we need to keep the braces on another year because you know that's coming.
Sylvia had braces. She had really crowded mouth for like what
years.
Yeah,
couple years.
More than a couple.
Maybe 3 years.
Yeah.
Yep.
So right around dinner time, Dashiell came down, and I was thinking of going and putting like some tinfoil on my teeth, but I figured it was too soon.
It is too soon.
Too soon for that, yeah.
That's too soon. So
maybe when he comes home with his braces.
With the braces, have a nice caramel apple and just say, huh,
yeah.
Look at this.
Yeah, well, I could tell. And he does like a caramel apple. So
you better enjoy them now.
We're going to wait until after Halloween.
Oh, that's a good
before
idea.
Before we do the braces.
Yeah, because yeah, he'll lose a bracket if he's trying to gnaw on something.
Yep. Yeah.
And that will cost you some
braces
bucks.
Are the worst. I feel you, Dashiell. They tear up your mouth. It's the worst.
All right.
Yeah, his love life is going to suffer.
Well, speaking of candy and snacks, we have a great guest for you this week, Richard Osmond. His new book is the third book in the Thursday Murder Club Mysteries, The Bullet That Missed. Now, listen, I've read all these books. Laura, you've read 2 out of 3, mm-hmm. and these books are just delightful, and they keep getting better. They focus on a group of seniors at a retirement community whose hobby is to solve cold cases. Now, Richard gets into the plot details in our chat, so I won't get into that now, but I can tell you this is another great entry in the series. You will laugh. You will also cry in this one. I love the characters. It's like revisiting old friends, and... Laura, you enjoy these books
okay.
as well.
So I talk a lot about cozy mysteries. I'm a cozy mystery fan. If you ever wonder, what's a cozy mystery? Where should I start? Thursday Murder Club would be, or even this book. You can start with this book too.
Oh yeah, you don't have to have read. It helps to have read the others, but you don't have to.
A beautiful example of a cozy mystery because it's so funny. It's so endearing in parts.
It is endearing.
And you get a really good, fast-paced mystery.
Yep. All right, so let's check it out. Here is the great Richard Osmond.
Yeah, Thursday, such a crazy, lazy day. Let's go have a picnic. Thursday, such a crazy, lazy day. Hope it doesn't rain. When I'm feeling Thursday.
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm doing great. How do I sound? We were experiencing a little technical difficulties. Do I sound all right?
I gotta say, you sound terrific.
Oh, the way. Thank you.
That's even better.
I just love the third. I don't know how you're doing it, but they keep getting better. What are you doing, Richard? What's in the water over there that you keep getting? They keep getting better.
Well, I don't know. Listen, if every time I deliver one, I don't think they're getting better. It's the same every time. I think, okay, fine, I've lost it. This is the time when the publishers are going to come back. And go, yeah, this new one. listen, Richard. You know we love you. Okay, we love your work, but is anything happening at home? Is there a problem? So each time I hand one in, I'm like, oh, this is the time I lose it. This is the time, not only is this book awful and people are going to hate it, it's going to be so bad that they're going to go back and look over the previous two books and go, actually, I see these in a new light now. I don't like these either. No, it's such a relief for me. This came out in the UK on the 20th, and the reaction has been so lovely, and I really don't take it for granted. I think most authors are like that. People are not handing in books and going, oh, I think we've got a good one here. I think this one's going to get them. So it's really lovely that people have reacted well to it. Because I'm writing the fourth one at the moment. And yeah, it's been, honestly, it's such a thrill. I love writing the books and I love the characters. And, you know, people's reaction to it is such a thrill for me.
It's great. It's like with each new installment, it's like returning to a set of friends that you missed, and it's nice to pick right back up with them.
That's nice.
So let's talk about this new one. Now, listen, this is The Bullet That Missed. This is a tale of swimming pools in the sky, Alice Cooper, and the sheer genius of Andre Agassi's autobiography. Richard Osman, what was it that inspired this latest chapter?
Wow. That is the nichest priestly of the book I've ever heard.
That's what I got out of it. I don't know.
As long as people don't think those are the main plot points, they are all mentioned. You're absolutely right. They are all mentioned. Yes, in this new one, I sort of write about the world of television a little bit, and I'm always fascinated with the idea of the local news anchor, right? The person who presents the local news, right. And is so world famous in a small area, and no one outside knows who they are. And I don't mean that in the kind of, who do they think they are? They are genuinely, in their area, nobody is more famous,
right?
You know, than your local news anchor, yeah. Right? And so I got this, I knew that Joyce from the Thursday Murder Club would be obsessed with whoever the local news anchor is in Kent and Sussex, where they live, and it's this guy called Mike Waghorn. She's talking about him early on, and she said he's been doing the news for 30 years, and every 5 years or so, they find a new woman to present it with him, which is also what local news stations
pretty
do.
Pretty much it. Right? That's right. That's
the guy
cycle,
is allowed to be 70. The women, as soon as they get to 30, it's like Logan's Run.
Boom.
Right?
Yep, yeah.
And off they go. And that was my sort of initial thought. So it's the story about one of his previous co-anchors, Bethany Waits, who was a very serious journalist as well as his co-anchor, and they had a very good, close relationship. But she is killed when she's investigating a story. And essentially, my MacGuffin to get into the plot is the Thursday Murder Club, they're always looking over old unsolved cases. And Joyce just sees this on the pile and realizes that if they investigate it, she will get to meet Mike Waghorn, the news anchor. And she's thinking, well, this, honestly, listen, we've had a really rough time of it the last few months. There's been a lot of murders, a lot of deaths. Let's do something really gentle. But that means that I get to meet this guy. And so they invite him over and they get into it. And it becomes a big mystery. And they have to uncover who killed this woman, Bethany Waits. And Joyce thinks maybe Mike Holm will fall for her. They never do with Joyce.
No.
You know, yeah. But it's so I get to write a bit about TV. But, you know, meantime, Elizabeth's past comes back to haunt her. You know, she was a spy.
Right.
And she is set a task which she is unable to refuse, and she has to kill somebody, or that's what she's set to do. So between these two plots, there's an awful lot going on. I throw an awful lot at the four members of the Thursday Murder Club, as always, and as always they rise to the occasion. I think
they do seem to rise to the occasion every time. It's amazing how they're able to do that, and in such a sweet, in their own sweet, genteel way. Now, but speaking of adding more to the pot, you got more, you're introducing more and more with each succeeding book. We're getting more and more, you know, kind of these ancillary members of the Thursday Night Murder Club. You've added love interest, friends, and more people to the cast. It's becoming just so full and rich and alive. You're juggling all these different characters. You seem to do it effortlessly. Are they getting harder to write for you, or are they getting easier by adding more people?
But it's interesting that in terms of the character list, the Thursday Murder Club is so sort of, they're so magnetic that whoever they sort of come across is, you know, is very attracted to them. And it's sort of over the books that they're like a snowball rolling downhill, and they're just collecting more and more people as they go along. And by the way, more and more people who I love writing. And so we're sort of getting to the point now where not everyone can be in the next one. Somebody has got to fall by the wayside, because every new book, but in the second book, there's a drug dealer called Connie Johnson, who's a terrible woman, but I love to write. And she comes back and she deals with Ibrahim. In this book, there's a KGB colonel called Victor, who is such a absolutely adore. And so I want him to come back. Of course, I want him to come back. But at some point, certain people can't. You can't have everyone come back for every book, because otherwise, you know, it'll end up being 1,000 pages long. But if ever I introduce a new character, I try and think. I'd like to be able to write a whole novel about this character. You know, I don't ever want to bring in someone who's a cipher, who's just there to kind of, you know, move the story along.
Right.
If ever I'm going to bring someone in, because sometimes you have to, in, sure. you know, for your plot. And if I do, I think not only are you going to move along my plot, but you're going to entertain people. You've got to sing for your supper while you're here. And it does mean you start collecting this sort of cast of characters, all of whom could sort of carry their own book. And it's very difficult to not write more of them.
Oh, that's funny. When you add like characters like Victor, do you get into character? Do you start when you're typing out and speaking in an accent for them? That kind of thing. I mean, you're a performer. You're on TV. Do you get into them? Are you a method writer?
I try and think it's fascinating. The thing with Victor is the one thing I needed to get across was Victor's special skill is he can persuade anyone of anything, mm-hmm. right? If Victor can just talk to you and he'll find a way, he's not a violent man, you know, he's not anything like that. But he will persuade anyone of anything. And how do you get that across, right? I can't just write Victor can persuade anyone of anything because it's like, can he? And so I was really thinking about Victor. How do I introduce him? How do I introduce this guy? And funnily enough, he lives in an apartment block with a swimming pool in the sky, which you mentioned earlier, which is a real place in London. So I'm thinking about him. It's real. It's crazy.
That's why.
And you have broadband providers out in the US, right?
Yes.
Uh-huh. And you can never get in touch with them, and it's a nightmare if it goes down, all of that.
Right.
So I thought, how do I introduce Victor, and how do I introduce the fact that he can persuade anyone of anything? And so the scene I write, the first time we meet him, he's on the phone to his broadband provider, trying to get someone to come over and fix his broadband that afternoon. And of course, the person on the phone is like, no, that's not going to happen. Yeah. It's impossible. And he's sort of, it's okay, interesting. And he just does this whole scene, and you find out about him as well. But during this whole scene, and by the end of it, he is persuaded the broadband provider to send an engineer that afternoon to fix his television.
Yeah.
And to me, that is like...
It's the perfect example. Yeah.
I believe if you can persuade Virgin Broadband to fix your broadband, you can persuade anyone of anything.
Yeah. Well, I guess you would out here be like the cable guy. You get the guy in to fix your cable, you know. Although more and more it's going on too, but it's the same deal. The DirecTV guy. Come on. You know, you're not seeing them for months. We all need to have a little Victor in us to get some of that done.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, that was a great scene, but I got to tell you, Richard, my favorite scene in the book is when a couple members of the gang attend an author signing, and they start peppering the author with all these impertinent questions. I slapped my knee on several occasions reading that scene. Is that from personal experience? Have you had any author readings gone astray for you?
No, I don't really do readings.
You don't?
Because I can't bear to read because when I read it, I'm like, I should have changed that. So I love doing talks. I love going on and chatting, and I take questions and this, that, the other. I loved writing it though, because you know it's essentially this guy who writes sort of quite gory crime books, and he's also a chief constable. He's a very high ranking police officer, and it is part time. He writes these gory crime books,
right?
And he goes and talks to the people at Cooper's Chase. And this is the thing I love about these characters and why the books make me laugh is. He's come along to talk to them, but they're not going to just sit and be polite. You know, they're like a class of school children.
They're like kids. They're like little kids.
Actually, I have a question.
Yes.
And they're like, oh, sorry, I've only just started. But before you go on, tell me about this.
Yeah.
And they do it so charmingly and so without edge. You know, they're not being mean.
That's the thing. They're so sweet about it.
And this writer has happened to kind of, I love when you've got a room full of people at Cooper's Chase. There's always, I must do one in the new book, another one in the new book. I love it when they've got a speaker coming and it's absolute chaos always.
That's funny. Now, speaking of characters, you got this character, Bogdan, and you've given him a great kind of relationship here with Donna. Mm. And now, the question that was asked, if you had to murder someone, how would you do it? So now I would have to ask you, Richard Osman, if you had to murder someone, you know, I don't know, a rival author, a rival quiz show host, how would you go about doing it? Perfect.
Listen, murder. Dave, none of us wants to murder anybody.
No,
but it has who knows what life throws at us.
Right. Sometimes it has to be done.
Never say never.
Right. That's right.
It's a really good question. I was talking to a forensics officer about it, because in a crime writing capacity.
Sure, let's say that. Well, let's say that.
And my view has always been, like, I ran this past the forensics officer, and she sort of approved, if you know what I mean.
Right.
I think the key, if you were, and you know, this is, I was just thinking of a plot. I think the key to getting away with a murder is to legislate for being caught, right? To assume you are going to be caught, and to
reverse engineer it,
the legal process.
Okay. You know? There you go.
And to have enough sort of, you know, dodgy stuff with the evidence and just enough questions around the evidence and to plant fake evidence, that sort of thing, just so you're going to go to court, but actually by the end, no one's going to be able to find you guilty because everyone's going like, yeah, but it's weird that, you know, that the clothes, they look like his, but actually we discovered they weren't his and actually the blood wasn't his in the end. There's so many weird things in this case. So I think the perfect murder is one where you get away in the court case rather than you get away with the actual murder.
Sounds like a lot of
that's
work.
Macabre, isn't it? I'm not going to do it, but I'm just as a thought experiment. Just,
yeah, as an experiment. It does. Yeah. It sounds. I think murders are inherently lazy, and that sounds like a lot of thought and a lot of forethought.
I'm reading a book at the moment, funnily enough, and it's an Agatha Christie I've not read, and I'm about 30 pages from the end, and I'm slightly wondering if this is her twist in this book.
Uh-huh.
There's a bit of me thinking, oh, because you know you can never think of anything that Agatha Christie hasn't thought of, yeah, you know, 100 years ago.
Yeah.
So I'm just getting to this book, and I'm thinking, is that what you've done? Is that what you've done, Agatha? So I shall find out in a day or so.
Are you good at figuring out who the murderer is or what the mystery
is? Not really.
Yeah.
Because I try not to. I'm quite good at suspending my disbelief.
I do the same thing. I don't like to try to figure it out.
You know, these days, sometimes if I read stuff, sometimes a sentence will jump out at me from an author and I just go, oh, I think I know what you've done there, because I think you're trying to fix a problem and you've done it through that. But with a really great writer, you find out that even that was a red herring. They look like they put something clunky, like a clunky sticking plaster over something that looks like something an amateur might do, but they've done that to fool you. You know, but sometimes we all have that thing in a book where you think, oh, I think I know who's done this. And at the end, that person has done it. And you're like, oh. But if in the end that person hasn't done it, you're like, oh, my goodness, that's amazing. And it's such a thin line. It's such an awful thin line.
That's true.
But, you know, if you spot the twist in something, it's – but I watched the whole of Sixth Sense knowing there was a massive twist.
Right.
No, and I didn't spot what it was.
Really?
I knew there was something massive.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't like it when you read a review of a book and they're like, get ready for the twist. You know, I don't want to know if there's a twist coming up. You know, it ruins it because that's all you're just looking for the twist. And you still didn't feed this. Now, my daughter watched The Sixth Sense. I showed it to her. I'm like, this movie's going to blow your mind. We sat down and she's like 2 minutes into it. She's like, oh, Bruce Willis is dead. I'm like, what? How did you know that? She was like 12 years old.
But that's like my mum. My mum will sit down and watch any crime thing on TV, and she'll be like 3 minutes in. She'll go, oh, that's not him. That's his brother. And I bet the brother actually was the one who inherited the land, and so he'd come back from Scotland, and so he's probably killed him. And at the end, you think, oh, yeah, that's exactly what happened. And you think, how have you done that?
Don't you hate those? They're so annoying. They're so annoying. Yeah, you don't want to watch it.
It's absolutely amazing. My mum is banned from making any comments at all during that. A crime drama series, because you'll just spoil it.
That's funny. Listen, there's a scene in the art house cinema where they go to Donna and Bogdan, and they don't have her favorite snacks. Now I don't know what a cola cube is, but we can move past that.
Okay.
I just want to know what, when you go to the movies, Richard Osman, what is your go-to snack? What are you a popcorn and soda guy? What do you get?
I'm going to ask you a question first.
Sure.
They talk about cola cubes. What do you think a cola cube would be?
Well, I picture like a little gummy, like a Coca-Cola flavored gummy, but like in a cube.
Yeah, it's almost that, but it's hard. It's like a hard candy.
Okay.
But in a cube, like the size of a small sugar lump, but cola flavored. So you're pretty close.
But it's like a hard. I didn't want to look it up. It's like a hard candy then.
Yeah, it's like a hard candy, like a sherbet lemon or something. What do I love? See, I sometimes think I love going to the cinema, right? I love it. I love films. But maybe about 10 years ago, I think maybe what I really like is pick and mix. You know? I think maybe actually I really like pick and mix. And cinema for me is like, yeah. You know, but I can't in any other part of the world go anywhere, buy some popcorn, buy some like sour gummy sweets. I can't just walk down the street and do that.
No.
The only time I'm allowed to do it is if I go to the cinema.
Yeah.
And so sometimes I think, I'd love just like a bag of sweets. That would be amazing. And I don't have there's no forum for me to do that.
Better go to the movies.
Whereas if I go and see Top Gun Maverick, you know, I can go, I've got my sweets and I guess I'll watch this Tom Cruise movie as well. So I think maybe I like sweets more than I like cinema. Listen, I like them both, but come on.
What was the last good movie you saw in the theaters? Was it Top Gun?
There's a great movie just come out here actually called See How They Run, which is it's sort of like a 1950s sort of detective-y thing. It's based around Agatha Christie's The Mousetrap, the play of it.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
When it just opens, and there's a theatre director, and it's quite postmodern but funny and smart. And Sam Rockwell is in it, and Saoirse Ronan is brilliant. So I don't know if it's come out in the US yet.
No,
and I'll tell you something else that's great about it. It's 1 hour 40 minutes.
Thank you. The movies nowadays are 2.5-3 hours. Who's got the time?
Mean, come on. You know, my sweets run out after half an hour. I'm not doing another 2.5 hours. So 1 hour 40 minutes. You think beautiful. Thank you. I will take that all day long. That's how long films should be.
That's exactly 1 hour and 40 is the sweet spot right there. 140, 145. You're in. You're out.
Yeah, beautiful.
You still got half of the afternoon left for you. I like it going to the movies during the day. I don't know about you. If you're
it's the dream. That's when you think, but it's the dream, isn't it? So you just think, I'm not at work. That's something.
Exactly.
There's no one else in the cinema. It's like that's I've right. got this kind of my own personal cinema. Imagine what they'd have to pay.
You can spread
to buy
out.
A house that had this personal cinema. I mean, you'd pay a fortune, you know. And I'm just sitting here, like the Lord of the Manor,
with Dolby surround sound. Yeah.
Oh my God, it's incredible. Yeah, I love it. I love it.
Here's what I do: is I take the tub of popcorn. And then I'll sprinkle some snow caps in there, some chocolate snow caps. Or if I don't have that, I'll sprinkle in some Reese's Pieces. Yeah. I go with the Reese's Pieces as well. It's a good.
I love a Reese's piece. We didn't used to have Reese's over here until maybe 20 years ago. When I was a kid, no Reese's.
What?
You know, American chocolate, you know, does not have a good reputation in the UK,
yeah, that's
right?
True.
You know that.
Yeah, well, we water everything down.
I don't want to break that to you.
We water everything down here. The cheese, the coffee, the chocolate, the beer, whatever it is, it gets watered down over here.
But listen, you do so much so well. So, you know, come on.
We're a simple people. We're a simple people. We do love Andre Agassi and his autobiography, though.
You are many things, Americans, but you are not simple people.
Have you read Andre Agassi's autobiography, though? I just read it this summer. It's brilliant. It's so good.
That's why I mention it.
Yeah.
Because so many sports biographies are like, yeah, and it's such a good book. Yeah,
it's amazing.
Well, that's it. Well, so Bogdan mentions it in his thing because he's talking about what his favorite books are. And I'm not going to give Bogdan like a terrible favorite.
You can't do
book.
That to the guy. You can't do that's right. You got to be true to the character.
He's going to like a sports biography, but he's going to like the autobiography. He's going to like the best one. Yeah. He's going to like the very best one.
And that may well be. Of course, it's the most recent one I've done, but it is a really good one. Now, I love Joyce. She always shines in these books, and it's great that she gets her own. We get to listen to her talk directly to us throughout all the books. And now she finds herself going down an internet rabbit hole when Googling someone. And I was wondering, what gets you trapped in internet rabbit holes as you're doing your research? Is there a subject where, is it sports biographies that gets you lost in it? What is it that candy, what loses you in your searching?
I always, there's a TV program that was on in the UK every week for about 40 years called Top of the Pops, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's just the charts. It's the top 40 charts.
Right.
But there's a channel here that just shows repeats of it endlessly, right? And it's fine. Some of the bands, you know, Duran Duran are on, you know them, you know, Aha are on, you know them. But then there's always like bands you go, oh, yeah, I remember that band who had like one hit from 1983. And I go, okay, I'm going to Wikipedia then. And you think, wow, that's what happened to them. And then, you know, you'll go on kind of, you know, YouTube. And it's so funny because It's a small channel, this thing, right? And it's playing these Top of the Pops. If you go on Twitter in the UK, it's a small channel, but you look at the trending topics and it will say something like the Goombay Dance Band. And you'll be like, then you know they've just been on this Top of the Pops. And everyone at the same time has gone, right, I'm looking up the Goombay Dance Band because I want to know what happened to them. But I love going into popular culture rabbit holes around, you know, like what happened to people in bands is always one of one of the most fun things you can do, you know, because they're 1 minute they're on Top of the Pops and then you're thinking, I never heard of you again.
Right.
You know, they almost always work in like music technology colleges somewhere.
Is that where they end up?
Yeah, a lot of them.
There are those who can't do teach, and I'm sitting in my theater classroom right now, as you can see.
Okay, I wondered where you were. This is great.
Yeah, this is my, I'm a high school theater teacher, so this is.
That's fun.
Yeah. Now, listen, so we saw on Twitter, so you've done 3 books now, 4, 5, and 6 are on their way, and you have a new series to debut. Listen. Please tell me that the new series is about the conversational French class. I have to know. I picture some rival family. There's a rivalry between the Thursday Murder Club and the Conference, because they're always talking about this. Conversational French needs to get in there. You got 1 minute.
I know that'd be a fun sort of like. It's like maybe in the next book I'll get like the scene in Anchorman with the news crews.
Yes,
the Murder Club and French conversation just having a face off.
Yeah,
no, a little turf the new war. One's going to be a real traditional detective thing. Really, well, not traditional, but it's going to be like a detective agency where people can bring cases. So I can my plots can come, you know, someone can knock on the door and bring me a plot.
I like it.
Which I would absolutely love. But there's going to be plenty more Thursday Murder Club before that as well, which is good.
Nice. All right, very good. Sounds like you are staying busy. Now, in the book, Pauline tries to convince Ron to treat himself by getting a massage, and it turns out hilarious. I slapped my knee at that one as well. Richard, besides going to the movies during the daytime, how do you treat yourself?
Well, funnily enough, the massage thing comes from a real place. I was born in 1970. I'm from a certain social demographic. You know, I'm not a massage guy, right?
Right.
If I want to relax, you know, I'll watch the golf, right?
There you go.
It's such a billion-dollar industry, this relaxation industry. Oh, we need to get Zen. I can get Zen. Honestly, I'll put the sport on. I can absolutely.
I'm with you 100%.
That you're looking for.
Yeah.
The nirvana that you're spending that money on.
Yeah.
I already have with my Sky Sports. I can turn it on. Anyway, my wife said, let's have this couples massage in Spain, right? Oh, so I said, I don't really have massages. Yeah. So I said, well, okay, let's do it. Because, you know, so we go and do it. And it is that thing of you can tell they're trying to relax you with whale song and with sort of this beautiful scent and stuff like that. And I'm like, please, for the love of God, don't tell me to relax. That's the least relaxing thing you can do.
It is.
And then they start massaging you. And I'm thinking, what do I do here? What am I going to, I'm not going to fall asleep, right? So how do I distract myself from this hell? In a sort of metaphysical thing, I thought, I tell you who else would hate this, Ron.
There you go.
Ron would hate being there. But, and also, he'd hate it more than I'm sort of comically hating it. Right. You know, I'm actually quite enjoying it. It's kind of fine.
Sure.
But a bit of me is hating it. Right. And I thought all of Ron would hate this. Right. Ron would absolutely detest this. So as I'm being massaged for like 45 minutes or whatever it is, I wrote the entire scene in my head
of great.
Ron being massaged and thinking about the story and, you know, little plot points and stuff like that. And then literally went away the next day and wrote that all down. So it comes from a very genuine place, that scene of his absolute torture at being told to relax and being massaged.
Yeah, I agree with you. My friends we go out to Vegas once a year and meet up out there with my friends from back east, and they love getting those massages. And 1 year they talked me into going. It's the worst. You're not relaxing at all. There's so much pressure.
Yeah.
You're so much pressure to relax that you go the other way and you just can't relax at all.
But also, if that's the only way you can relax, I don't know what it tells us about the rest of your life.
That's true.
I don't know. If you're saying the only way I can relax is for there to be sandalwood and like men paid to pummel me, right? That's honestly, it's the only way I can relax. The only way I can get any peace.
Yeah, that's
right. Is to be pummeled by an Eastern European guy while I'm looking at a Persian rug. It's all like, it's the only thing I can do. You just think, wow. I mean, I can just walk down the street and relax. You know,
mm-hmm.
No pummeling needed.
No oils, no scents, nothing.
I quite honestly, I quite enjoyed it in the end. But, There it is.
If we're being honest. You got an appointment booked next week. Okay, I got you. Yeah. Okay.
Obviously, I can do without the wind chimes. You can leave that, but the actual massage was nice.
The wind chimes. Just give me a break. Are you binging anything on TV? You watching anything good?
Yeah, I don't know if this is something you would have in the US. There's an Australian thing we just had over here called The Newsreader, which is set in an Australian newsroom in 1986, I think it is. So it's a nice sort of period piece. But at the same time, just the kind of politics of a newsroom. That's really, really great. Huh. I don't know where you would get it because it's on BBC over here, so it might be on Britbox or something. I'm trying to think of American stuff that we've watched recently, or in English stuff that you would like. But that I would really recommend. And there's a show called Outlaws we had over here as well. Mm. Just Stephen Merchant. You know Stephen Merchant?
Oh, yeah, I love Stephen Merchant, yeah.
Yeah. So he's written this thing about people in Bristol in England doing community service. They've all done stuff wrong, so they're picking up litter. And he's got Christopher Walken is in it.
Oh, man.
So you've got Stephen Merchant, Christopher Walken, and all these British people. It's called Outlaws. It's really
good. All right, I'm going to look for it. We both loved, Laura would tell you here, if she was here, we'll imagine she's here telling you how much we loved A Ladies Man with Stephen Merchant. Have you seen that?
Oh, yeah. And he's my height as well, Stephen Merchant.
Are you that? So
we're in the Tall Guys Club.
Yeah. That show was so much fun. So much fun. All right. And it's been so much fun talking to you, Richard Osman. Thank you once again for coming by.
Always a pleasure.
And
listen, Laura might know what she's missed out on.
I know. I'll force her to sit down and listen to the whole thing again.
Brilliant. Thank you, guys. I'll see you next year, I hope.
All right. That sounds great. Looking forward to it. Take care, Richard. Bye-bye.
Cheers. Thank you.
Yep. Bye. The Inside Club. All right, there you go. Thank you so much to Richard Osman for hopping on, and now let's open it up.
The library is officially open.
Time for some
book reviews.
And let's start with
Laura Medicus.
Where we are, I don't know where we
Thanks.
Are.
So my book is called We Spread by Ian Reid. And Ian has too many I's in his name. It's I-A-I-N-R-E-I-D.
You think it's Ian Reid?
No, it's pronounced Ian. Okay. Actually, I don't know how he pronounces it, but I did Google. Didn't you hear me sit on the couch the other day and wonder why my phone was saying Ian?
Oh, right, right.
Ian.
Yeah.
Right? Just get rid of the second I. So anyway.
Too many I's. There's no I in team, but there are a lot of I's in Ian Reid.
So
there's three, eight letters and three I's.
Listen to you. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Five vowels.
Mm.
Huh.
Too many vowels.
Right. Why are we discussing this?
Can I buy a vowel? Right,
I wish I was smarter. So this book is on the smaller side. It's under 300 pages. This book packs a punch with the words that he has. So he's the author of I'm Thinking of Ending Things.
Yeah, I read that one. That's a good one.
I think it's, is that like they literary?
They turned into a Netflix series.
Is that like literary cult fiction, would you say?
Yeah, I'd say so.
Like a cult favorite.
And it's also one where you have to go back and reread it again.
I wanted to, as soon as I finished We Spread, I was like, oh, I need to reread
it. That must be his thing then. Because you, at the end, you get a whole new perspective on things.
Yes.
At least with his other one. So
yeah.
I'm guessing that's his thing.
It must be. He's a New York Times bestselling author, so maybe I don't know how cult he is, but it feels like a cult book when you read his books, I think.
Right.
So this book is it's a fairly simple story, but it is one of those stories that once you get into it and things start happening, your mind starts to get blown. Mm. So on the surface, this is about an older woman named Penny who lives alone in an apartment in an unnamed city. Older, probably late 80s would be my guess. She does not have a husband or children. And she's really struggling living on her own. So the first chapter, I found it a little bit tough to read because there's a lot in there about loneliness and aging. But it's written so well that I just kept turning the page, even though I'm thinking, oh, this might not be for me.
Right.
So she falls in her apartment one day. She's trying to screw in a light bulb that had gone out. And her landlord ends up helping her, and he takes her out to the country to an assisted living place that he tells her she actually set up with her partner before her partner died. She has no memory of ever seeing this place before. She doesn't know. None of it rings a bell for her.
Well,
but then
weird.
Again, she seems to be suffering from dementia. So as a reader, we think, okay,
right.
She might
Makes
not
sense.
Remember.
Sure.
She just
yeah.
forgot.
Uh-huh.
So there's only three other older people there. And at first, it seems like this is a wonderful place to spend your last few years. You know, however long you have left, this seems like a great place.
Right.
So she's an artist, and they've supplied her with blank canvases and paint. She's sleeping better than she has in years. You know, as you get older, you just don't sleep as well. And I guess when you get to be in your late 80s, early 90s, you really don't sleep well.
Oh, no.
Like the food there is amazing. She's eating heartily.
Yeah.
You know, she's actually painting a little bit, which is amazing. Then things start happening.
Oh.
So this book reads a little bit like a dream. So you know how in a dream, like you might be sitting next to somebody and then you turn and they're gone and you're in a completely different situation all of a sudden?
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. Like none of it quite makes sense, but because it's a dream, you just go along with it and you're like, oh, I guess I'm sitting on a rock now. I just was at a dinner party. And like time goes differently in dreams. That's how Penny starts experiencing life at this home. She cannot tell how time is passing. She has no idea how long she's been there. She feels like she's new there, but the director and the others make references to her having been there for years.
Oh, that's weird.
That's creepy.
That is creepy.
So this is a book. You wonder while you're reading it, is this just dementia? Is it aging? Or is there something sinister going on here? As a reader, it feels really sinister. And I just kept turning the pages, trying to figure out what's going on. Because you're seeing it from Penny's point of view. And there's some weird stuff happening that you're like, oh, there's something greater than... There's something perhaps supernatural or something else at play here. It's really weird stuff that happens in this book. This writer, Ian Reid... Maybe that's why he likes the extra eye. He's very comfortable with weird. So while I was reading this book, I kept saying, oh, this is so weird.
Yeah.
It's weird. So this is it's a brilliant story that is really about aging. And I highly recommend it. I did not find it depressing. If you're worried it's depressing, it is not. It is very good. And it's called We Spread. And We Spread pertains to one thing that goes on in the book that is very interesting as well.
Oh, spreading butter on toast. Yeah,
exactly.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, if it's as good as the other one, I'm sure it's a great book.
It's very good. Short. Right.
Check that out. That is. But then you got to go back and reread it afterwards.
You do need to reread it afterward. Because so afterward, I finished it and I sat there and I go,
oh. Well, yeah, that's what happened to the other one. I was
might
like,
need to reread
all right,
this.
Now I got to go reread it. I have not done that yet, but at some point I'm going to have to. And that was a short one as well. All right, that's recommended by
Laura Medicus.
And my book this week,
Dave Medicus.
This is why we can't have nice.
Is called Now Is Not. Excuse me. Now Is Not the Time to Panic. And this is written by Kevin Wilson.
It's a cute title.
Yeah, it's a great title, and I really enjoyed this book. It was kind of unexpected. I didn't know where this one was going, but I really enjoyed it. This is about two teenagers, kind of misfit kids, kind of artsy type, both with kind of family structure that's not really there for them. They are in their teens. One of them is an aspiring artist, and another is an aspiring writer, Frankie and Zeke, a boy and a girl. They are two lonely kids who one summer create a piece of art with this phrase written on it. The edge is a shanty town filled with gold seekers. We are fugitives, and the law is skinny with hunger for us. And what I also recommend is listening to, reading the afterword by the author. There's a great afterword where he explains where that phrase came from and how he incorporates it in all of his work. So anyway, these two kids, they make this piece of art. They put this phrase on there and then they go all around town, a small town, Coalfield, Tennessee, and they hang this artwork up everywhere. They put it all in these public places.
With the words.
With the words on it, yes. Suddenly, this art goes viral. People make copies of the posters. They put the posters up everywhere. This phrase is everywhere. And then all of a sudden, it starts to go south, and there are some repercussions that occur because of this artwork that's being put in. And I don't want to go too deeply into it because I don't want to spoil what happens. So that's the first part of the book. In the second, part of the book. It is years later as Andrew asphyxiated himself. What's up with the sneeze?
I don't think there? I could sneeze I that quietly. What that, was. That was impressive.
Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah, very nicely done.
Yeah.
Didn't hear. I'll give you a
Yeah, boy.
But he like wrapped his arm over his head. His whole body violently shook.
He is a man who has sneezed in many a meeting.
Yeah, I'm sure he has. Yeah. So anyway,
that's some skill.
In the second part of the book, it is years later, and now Frankie is getting messages from a reporter who claims to know all about what happened that summer and is threatening to expose her, which could spell big trouble for Frankie, especially as she didn't even tell her family that she was one of the two who created this art. This is a thought-provoking, fascinating book that features two likable characters. It explores ideas about the power of art and its hold over us. It really resonated with me, and also dives into young love.
Oh, it's creepy.
Maybe I shouldn't have added the music.
Young.
Well, they're teenagers.
I know, but it's the music.
It's the music. This is a good one. If you're looking for something different, check it out. Now is Not the Time to Panic by Kevin Wilson. All right. Andrew
Dowd. Don't stop, make it pop, DJ, blow my speakers up.
What do you got for us?
So I've got a space opera. The book is called Star Bounty, Absolution. And the book is written by Rick Partlow, who is living in our neighboring state of Montana.
Oh, okay. Not exactly neighboring, but now I got to play this.
So I was testing to see if anybody was paying attention. He actually lives in Wyoming. He lives in the neighboring state of Wyoming. So, see, the story of this book is Grant Masters is the main character of the book.
All right.
And Grant is basically, he's lost his wife, he's lost his son, and not, you know, they're still alive. They've left him. And the reason they've left him is Grant used to be a marshal. And the marshals are considered, you know, straight-laced, straight-backed, you know, police officers, space marshals that go out and investigate things.
All right.
But Grant is the type of marshal, or he was the type of marshal, that basically could not let, he basically was out for justice. He wanted to make sure that justice was done. And so Grant gets stuck in a situation where an executive basically needed to be brought to justice, and Grant was the man to try and do it. So what happens is he finds out that an executive is guilty of some crimes, and you know, and again, it is his mantra: everybody should be brought to justice.
Right,
and so he can't let it go. And so basically, then the executive frames him for a crime, which he, you know, he obviously didn't do, and so Grant still can't let it go. And so, but basically goes down there and he beats the crap out of the guy.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's the end of his career. And so now he's been framed for this crime. He's been kicked out as a marshal. His wife left him. His wife has taken his son with him. And so basically, you know, what does he do? He has the skills of a police officer. But, you know, what is he to do? And so he basically turns to be a bounty hunter.
Okay.
And as a bounty hunter, he still has to work with the department where he used to work. And, you know, and so that's a scene in the book where he's got to go back in there. But everybody wants to get in his face. Everybody wants to give him a hard time. And he still has friends there in the department. But basically, they feel that he has betrayed them as marshals, right? That he's made them all look bad, right? And so that's kind of like the environment that he's in. But, you know, and so one of the scenes in this book is, you know, and Grant is obviously very smart. He's very good at what he does. His ship, for example, so he has a little bounty hunter ship. And he's got to make payments on it, right? So he's got to keep bringing the bounties in order to keep paying the bills. But his ship is named Chari Ito.
Hmm.
Now, are either of you familiar with Chari Ito?
No.
He was an ancient German bounty hunter.
German?
German. Hmm. And he used to hunt bounties for the Romans. Hmm. So the Rhine River, the Romans would basically fight these, barbarians or something like that.
Did you really think we'd have any idea who Chari Ito
you know,
is?
He knows who he is.
You guys,
so clearly we might.
Did you know who he was?
Oh, hell no, I didn't.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, he didn't know who he was. No.
You, You guys are literary geniuses. I figured you might know this. But anyways, but
it's not a literary character.
Thank you, Andrew. Yeah.
That's a history.
But of course,
character.
There's one point in the book where somebody says, like, what kind of a strange name is that for a ship? He's like, well, I'm a bounty hunter. So anyways, now his sidekick is a dog, but it is a robot dog.
Gotta have a robot dog.
With a very smart artificial intelligence.
Didn't you guys think we'd have robot dogs by now when you were kids?
Robot pet, yeah, for sure.
Because in the future.
They had pet rocks. It's clearly a predecessor to a pet robot.
Yeah. Well, they had little animatronic things that moved around when we were kids. Yeah, I feel like if you said in 2023, are people going to have a pet dog? Not,
you know, their robot pets aren't cuddly. You know?
I work with people that don't have the intelligence of a pet rock. But that is another story. So, and so, what do you think the name of the robot dog is?
Andrew. Here we go again. Emperor Hirohito.
Toto. I don't know.
It starts with D and ends with G.
Dog.
Dog. Oh. So basically, that's what he calls him is dog, and it's an illegal AI because it's obviously a very smart AI, which you're not allowed to put in the, you know, in, and so they haven't, he hasn't really told the full story like in this book as to exactly how he came about it. So he tells a little bit about how...
You got to draw things out when you got a series to write.
Yeah, yeah. And so maybe in the next book, he'll get into a little bit more about Dog and his origins. So they are the sidekick. And so there's humor in this book. It doesn't take things too seriously. And the first apprehension that he takes is more of a routine case. But, you know, Dog, who's obviously very smart, right? And he feels like, you know, that... Grant is somewhat beneath him, that humans are somewhat beneath him, but he's still a good partner. But in the first apprehension, he goes and the dog basically grabs the guy by the crotch.
Oh no.
To basically get him to submit, you know, and it's sort of like the humorous scene. And I even talked to my kids over dinner about this, you know, about this particular scene. Cause I was laughing and they're like, well, what are you laughing at? I'm like, well, I was just thinking back to, you know, the scene in this book. I'm like, can you imagine Rex doing that to somebody who's our, you know, 110-pound golden retriever?
Yeah, that would not be well.
Yeah. So, in the first case of routine, and then he's like, well, and the people at the marshal station are like, you know, you really ought to get out of here. You can go do this anywhere in the galaxy. Why are you staying here? Like, we don't want to see you come back. It's like, and she's like, okay. He's like, so give me, what are some of the high price bounties? Give me one of, you know, let's see the highest price bounties. And of course, it is obviously a very risky bounty for a woman who has been accused of treason and nobody's been able to find for several years. And so that is his next case, is basically going after that. And, you know, and obviously you get the sense that something is going to go wrong.
I smell a romance.
And so maybe.
There you go. That's appropriate.
Is that better?
That's okay. Appropriate.
And let's say. Maybe, but mm-hmm. but I will say in the first book, nothing really happens in
okay,
the first book.
Okay.
Is there a possibility there? Mm-hmm. There may be.
Yeah.
And so basically, he goes after this other bounty. Things go wrong. You know, but again, the book is humorous. I mean, it is a space opera book. It is not. It doesn't take itself too seriously. If you're looking for an escape, this is a great escape.
Sounds fun.
So hop on Chariito. And, you know, jump, you know, go after the star bounty. I've started reading the second book in the series. And again, it really is a very comical book and doesn't take itself too seriously, but it is Star Bounty by Rick Partlow.
All right. Very good. That is recommended by
Andrew Downs.
You know, another thing I'm surprised we haven't seen are more like Star Wars spinoffs, like more space opera movies or stuff like that. Do you know what
That's
I mean?
That's true.
I know they keep rebooting Star Trek and all that, but...
Well, but you think about it. And I know if you've, like, on Apple, is they do have all these Star Wars spinoffs now.
Oh, but they're, like, it. Star Wars spinoffs.
And they are. In that Star Wars universe.
I mean, like, a new thing.
And I get it. And there is some, like, Babylon 5.
Oh, Babylon 5.
Yeah, that that's, like, 20 years old.
It doesn't matter. That is still, like, a classic.
People love that.
But the thing is... You wonder if Star Wars is so big and Star Wars sucks up all the money and all the energy.
For that type of person.
And that's the problem is,
yeah.
What can compete?
In between Star Trek and Star Wars, there's not much left in the market for that. That's true.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Good point. All right, time for the
audiobook of the week.
audio book of the week. As we creep towards October and Halloween, aww, I've got a little spooky one for you. As I start to bring these, and we just finished a great werewolf book last night. But this is not a werewolf book. This is called What Moves the Dead by T. Kingfisher, narrated by Avi Roque. Hmm. And I love this one. This
T. Kingfisher is familiar.
T. Kingfisher. That is a pseudonym.
For who?
Maybe look that up. I don't know. Look that up for me. So this one is a retelling of the classic Edgar Allan Poe story, The Fall of the House of Usher. And it's a short listen. It's only about a 5-hour listen.
I've read one of these. I read, she wrote The Hollow Place. Hollow Places, I believe. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, if you're like me, you will like this one. What I should say is, if you're like me and you don't remember the story that well, all I remembered is that there was this guy named Usher who had a house and it fell. So really, bonus for me and anyone who doesn't remember the story.
I don't remember it at all.
Yeah, I didn't remember that. Andrew, do you remember the story?
I do not.
Yeah, so nobody remembers the story. So why don't you dive in right here to what moves. I'm just going to go put that out there. Nobody Well, out of all the classic Poe stories, I feel like all you remember is what was in the title, The Fall of the House.
It's a great title.
Of Usher. It is a great title. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, so is What Moves the Dead.
I think that's a better title.
Gives a little bit more of a clue also as to what
is going
on.
Is it a zombie book?
Don't want to speculate too much.
We
don't
want to
give away too many.
People that can raise the dead? Necromancer. Necromancer?
Listen, just park yourself in your seat a little bit there.
Should just start shouting paranormal things.
And I'm not going to tell you if you're right or you're wrong. What I will tell you is that the book is spooky and it's atmospheric and is an experience that can be enjoyed. The story is about a retired soldier named Alex Easton who finds out that his childhood friend Madeline Usher is dying. And so he comes to pay a visit to where she lives, which is the house of Usher, and spend some time with her before she dies. But what he discovers upon his revival...
Maybe
a little slip there. Upon his arrival, is that the old manor is crumbling. There are strange mushrooms on the grounds. There are weird hares, as in rabbits. Weird rabbits but they call them hares in the book that just stare at him and they creep up.
This
there's one,
so
then
good.
There's two, then there's three, then there's four, then there's five hares
like
in the
I
woods
love.
Staring at you. Oh, you would. And they act strangely. Madeline is pale. She is thin. She is dying. Her husband, Roderick, is sickly looking as well. There is a pond that lights up at night. All manner of weirdness in this one. This sets the tone for the book. And what you get is a mysterious tale. They get stranger. It goes along. It is incredibly atmospheric with a great sense of place and oddness that will really just have you trying to figure out what the hell is going on. This is a great one to usher in fall. Thank you. Thank you. Let's take a listen to a clip. This is What Moves the Dead by T. Kingfisher, narrated by Avi Roque.
I shouldn't touch it if I were you, officer, she said again, pointing to the mushroom. I looked down at the stick in my hand, as if it belonged to someone else. Ah, no? Are they poisonous? She had a rubbery, mobile face. Her lips pursed together dramatically. They're stinking red gills. A fœtida, not to be confused with A. fœtidissima. But that's not likely in this part of the world, is it?
Audiobook of the week.
All right, there you go. That'll do it for us this week. Thanks once again to the great Richard Osman. Check out his book, The Bullet That Missed. And if you're out there, go ahead and give us a 5-star review wherever you listen to us. It would be appreciated. My name is Dave Medicus. See you next time.
Adios.
Excelsior.
Men paid to pummel me.